the first problem that everyone references as their biggest problem is data quality. It's always some level of like data reliability, data quality, trust in data. You know, the business doesn't trust the data.
Welcome back to Insights by Design, episode 9. We're extremely grateful to have Ben Rogojin today. Ben, how are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm fantastic. Thank you. Where are you calling in from today?
I'm in Palo Alto today. Yeah.
I love it.
Hotel room.
What's the weather like in Palo Alto?
It was sunny, I guess, yesterday. It's classic, I think, Palo Alto winterish. So kind of brisk in the mornings, whatever, 38, 40 something. And then it warms up like to where you can pretty much wear a t-shirt in the afternoon.
Exactly. Such a great area. Well, I appreciate you jumping on today. For those who aren't familiar with your work, would you mind giving a quick introduction?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, currently I work as a data consultant, helping companies kind of figure out their data infrastructure, what they need to set up, how to set it up. Sometimes I get hands-on, sometimes I stay very high level, but that's my current day-to-day. Prior to that, I worked at Facebook for a few years, and before that worked in healthcare and at a healthcare startup. Doing data analytics. So I've been doing data engineering and data analytics for a while. Along with that, I've done with consulting, it kind of was like a slow roll of me starting in that. So part of that was me just creating tons of content. So you can find me under CL Data Guy here on YouTube, Substack, and a few other places. And honestly, part of that is I like creating content. I don't think I'd keep creating it as long as I did if I didn't. And then the other part is like it's a great way to, you know, find people who have the problems that I want to solve.
And I love what you do because you have a great balance of doing high-level educational content, but then also very technical, clear explanations in two categories that I see growing a lot. One, data and analytics engineering, which is just growing like crazy. It's scaling with the amount of data that we have and the need to have high-quality data, but then also the rise in the need for independent consultants. At being on the decision side and leadership in data, I use independent consultants a lot. And more and more frequently, independent consultants are kind of my go-to for solutioning. And those are two of your specialties, which I think is just an amazing timing and an incredible expertise.
Yeah. No, I think I do see like independent consultants in particular kind of growing. And I think there's like you said, there's a lot of benefits that consultants can bring. There's also, obviously, it's like, I think there's pros and cons. You can hire some consultants who will just come in, I think, and give you an opinion and be like, peace out. or maybe build something that you know, they know they're not going to be there long term, so they're getting paid regardless. But I think there's definitely value. So otherwise, again, probably wouldn't be doing it otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. With consultants, I found like, the reputation means a lot. I've reached out to partners in other industries, if I get a good consultant that I trust and have a good relationship with, I'll try to use them over and over again if I can. But your career is really interesting. So Facebook tends to be what, at least traditionally, a lot of data folks are trying to get to. They want to work in big tech. And you got there, and then you were able to transition into being a consultant. What did that decision process look like for you?
Yeah, you know, it was really cool, I think, to work for Facebook for the time that I did. You know, I mean, one, you work with a ton of really smart people. Two, you get all the benefits people show on all their cliche, you know, day in the life of a Facebook engineer and kind of video. But the transition was definitely, I think, hard because, you know, like, again, you're working at Facebook, you worked really hard to get there, right? Like you studied for interviews, you got past them. You know, probably interviewed at multiple companies like Amazon, Google, Facebook, all that to get there. You're making a decent amount of money. It's like it's more than I think I ever expected when I first broke into even the software world, where I was like six figures is what I'd be, you know, would be mind blowing, and then going beyond that in terms of like, you know, beyond just 100K. So it's really hard because it's hard to let go, I think, because you work so hard to get there. You kind of have to let some part of you die that thought that this was what you wanted. And it was for a time. But I think, you know, Consulting tends to be, one, a lot of fun. And two, I just got to a point that I was doing so much consulting work that I couldn't do both. Like it was definitely like I had to just call it, because if I didn't, something would have gone wrong. Either I would have lost my job at Facebook probably for not focusing enough on that, or, just having too many goals. And so, it just came to a point where I had to make a call. So I was like, all right, I have no choice. I was working way too many hours and was very tired most of the time.
And even though you had started consulting and you built it up, so then you had a smooth transition, you didn't just go straight from one into the other one. You didn't go zero to one. You already had some work and then were able to transition full time. Was there anything that surprised you about consulting full time?
I'm trying to think if there's anything specific that surprised me. I don't think there's anything specifically that surprised me. Maybe because I had been doing it on and off the whole time. It's not to say that I know everything, but it's to say that, like, you expect certain things. Like, that there will always be ebbs and flows in business. I think I've learned to ride that wave a little more, like be a little more with it, versus, like, I think early on I used to feel a little more nervous when it felt like, oh, certain months I'm not busy. But then I found that, like, it feels like every year certain months are not busy, which probably have more to do with business cycles than it does with if my business will continue, because then it'll be just the next month where I'm doing twice as much work. And so, figuring out how to ride that way, figuring out how to, like, also better manage all of, like, if you have projects coming in and there's a lot of them, maybe try to stagger them out a little more so it's just not all at once. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything specific that surprises me, but there's definitely things that you're like, you kind of, I think, learn to adapt to.
Yeah. And I think that, so when I started doing consulting and speaking with others who have started their own businesses, I think the administrative overhead of starting your own business is often surprising, and it speaks to how prepared you were to make the transition. But a lot of folks I speak with, they're like, I love the actual work of consulting, but the actual work of administrating a business is so much. And you've done a lot to prepare other people to make that transition through your consulting academy. You want to speak a little bit about that? Because I think that's really unique.
Yeah, I mean, I think somewhere maybe a year into working full time as a consultant, I had people start asking, and many of them had worked at, like, again, Facebook, Google, all these people who, I think, combination of, like, layoffs and different things, they were like, we're looking to do the same thing you did. Right. And then I had a few conversations with them, but you keep having these conversations, you're like, okay, I'm saying the same things over and over again. I don't have time to, like, have one-on-ones with everyone. So I was like, all right, I'll just build, it's not a long course. I think it's like 5 hours of content, maybe less. I keep adding to it, but it's not like drastically long, but I just decided, like, oh, it makes sense to, like, try to encapsulate some of the lessons I've learned along the way. Some of the things that, like, you can pick up, whether it's how to get clients, different types of projects you can run, what people find valuable, even, like, I tried to, like, put all of that in there. Cause I think, when you first start consulting, you think that the value you bring is just doing the work. But there's so much more than that's, again, one reason people are, I think, hiring you, is not just because you can technically do the work, but because you bring in different perspectives, or you can help people even just decide on which solution to pick. And all of that is valuable. And considerably so. It's not just like you are someone that codes, you can do a lot more. And so helping people understand that there's other ways you can value what you do. And I think consulting lets you do that, and lets you take advantage of a lot of the things you might not even be compensated for in your normal day-to-day, but you should be. So, yeah.
A lot of the value I've gotten from working in your academy is the community. As you noted, when I hire consultants, a big reason I hire some of them is because of the experience that they have with other companies, and they can tell me what their experience is on the landscape and what other companies are doing, and if what I'm trying to do is weird. And I've found that in the community that you've built, I'm able to get a sounding board from lots of other consultants who might have different perspectives or good ideas. What was your process behind not just building the content, which you could have just built content and had people go through a course, but you build a community around it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that, especially if you're an independent consultant who is maybe a army of one or maybe you have a small team, like the biggest thing that you need besides just obviously kind of maybe some little bit of an accelerator is a group of people that you can talk to, like you said, like a sounding board, because there's so much to know in this world, whether it's technical, whether it's, you know, business-wise, like what do you do for taxes? Like what corporation do you set up? You know, when does it make sense maybe to look at an S corp versus, you know, maybe just doing in some sort of like solo kind of business? Like all of those like can seem tricky. I think even now, I think I take some of the knowledge that I have there for granted or for granted. So I think that, you know, just having a community is great because you can talk to people, you can understand, like even understanding like how much should I charge for something can be, you know, hard because it's hard to say like, well, how big is the client? How big is the project? You know, one client, I think we talked about this before we started the call, right? Like $10,000 might be a lot of money. For another client, $10,000 is what they, you know, lose on a daily basis. Not to say that they should be losing it, but, you know, it's not something that they consider, right? And so I think those little things you'll pick up. And so it's great to have other people you can talk to and be like, oh, what do you know that I don't know?
Yeah, just having that experience and that exposure. One thing that I appreciate about Zach Wilson, our mutual connection, how he talks about justifying his salary when he formerly worked at Airbnb, is talking about all the problems he solved and how much money he was able to save Airbnb. And he's like, I just make a fraction of all the, you know, millions of dollars that I was able to save this company. And just getting that perspective and speaking with folks like you and Zach with that kind of experience can give confidence to new consultants and give them that perspective of, oh, here's the problems I'm solving and here's how I can quantify it and justify the value that I'm bringing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really important to understand that, like, you know, if you're not providing, like, I think most consultants say something like 10x the value that you're charging, right? Like, in a weird way, you shouldn't maybe even be doing that project for that company, right? Like, if they're paying you, like, if it's like a, you know, billion-dollar company and they're paying you $10,000, at most you're providing, what, $50,000 to $100,000 of value, which may or may not be great for them. So it's one of those things where it's like, maybe consider their scale and understand you're probably providing a lot more than you know, what you think you are. So yeah, I think that's important to think about. But I think, like you said, it's important to always consider like, hey, how can I provide value? Because that's really what it is. It's not about how can I make money. It's like, well, what am I doing that like makes people want to work with me in terms of like providing the value and providing them, you know, something that they can't currently get.
And that you do a great job providing value to the community, both in the consulting circles, but also through YouTube, LinkedIn. And one of the themes where I see you providing a lot of value on is on data modeling and the overall process of just simplifying your data flows and pipeline. What kind of trends are you seeing in that area?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's funny because I always feel like the data world is so cyclical, right? Like it feels like we're solving the same problems we've always been solving. So it's like, yeah, are we talking more about data modeling? Yes, I think there's definitely a push for that in the last 2 years. I think that was really spurred by the fact that, you know, a lot of the solutions that came out of what was like the modern data stack era, if it's still around, if it's not still around, whatever, obviously people are talking about that, but the tools were so often easy to use, which is the point, right? Like tools should be easy to use, that it was easy to get away with just setting up infrastructure, right? Like, okay, we've ingested data into Snowflake or into Databricks or wherever. Now we're just building on top of it and we're not really maybe considering the data model. So I think it just pointed out the fact that that is very important. And in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine who works with another solution, a Palantir, and he brought up the fact that, you know, it's the same thing where he called it something else where it's like domain, what was it? Not domain design, but basically having to design data models. Like when you break it down, you're like, okay, so you need a data model for this to be useful. And that's what it comes down to in a lot of situations is like, yes, you can set up your data infrastructure. It can be fast. You can be doing real time. But if no one can use that data, if it's hard to use, it really doesn't matter that much. Actually, I had the same similar conversation last night with someone who was talking about ThoughtSpot. And they're like, yeah, like, okay, so ThoughtSpot has like their searchable kind of solution that, like, you know, instead of maybe building a data viz solution by itself. You can kind of search things and it can kind of build it for you. You still have to kind of build this semantic layer of sorts where it's like, it's very clear what means what, right? Like, okay, employee means this, resource means that, and being very clear. So having a clear data model just makes it so much easier to, I think, work in this space. Like I have a client right now who's got a data model that has multiple terms for the same ID, which means it's really hard to know, okay, in this table, you know, whatever X ID is Y ID in another table. But if you're not in that every day, you're not going to know that. And so it makes it very, very hard to operate.
Absolutely. Yeah, the modern data stack era where we really had this big rush of really great programs. We kind of stacked them on top of one another, like, oh, here's a problem, here's a solution, here's another problem, here's another solution. Let's link them all together. The more we abstract away the underlying fundamentals through these new products and programs, as you noted, it can really hide sloppy thinking and sloppy engineering. And in my opinion, it really emphasizes the need for folks like you who have the deep expertise so that you can understand and strengthen the foundational fundamentals. So then I think that it creates the need for experts like yourself and then beginners or business users who can then take on that modern data stack or those easy programs. So it's like you need deep expertise, but we've also made it accessible to business users. But you can't not have both. You can't get rid of the expertise and just have beginners using these tools, which I think some companies have had, and now their fundamentals are a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a good way of putting it.
Where do you see the biggest needs in overall the 2024 AI is coming? To prepare for AI, I'm sure lots of companies are calling you like, Ben, we want to do AI. Can you help us with our data? What are some of the biggest needs that you're seeing?
Yeah, I think the biggest needs that you tend to see, one, always remains data quality, right? Like that's the big thing. I was talking last night, doing like a quick, like lightning talk. And one of the points I brought up is everyone wants AI, but when I'm running, a state of data kind of survey, and I've done that now, this is my second year. The first problem that everyone references is their biggest problem is data quality. It's always some level of like data reliability, data quality, trust in data. You know, the business doesn't trust the data. And, you know, if that's still where we're at, and, you know, this has been a problem for, again, 3-4 decades, probably longer. But like if we're talking about data warehousing as kind of a field, like it's, you know, it's really hard to build on top of that. It's really hard to build AI on top of that. The other example I give is that like both Bard and ChatGPT will give you, maybe not anymore, but at least the last time I checked, an erroneous name for who is the Seattle data guy. They just guess, like, because that is how those models are. They're not necessarily guessing, but they're, you know, giving you the most likely output. So they put my name as like Michael. I mean, in that case, it's a little different because maybe it has the right data and maybe it's just, you know, based on how it picks names, it's kind of, you know, putting the most likely name forward. But yeah, like it gives all the other information correctly, right? Like, okay, 80,000 subscribers, all these things, but it doesn't, you know to me what I would consider the most baseline of that information. And I think that's kind of very true similarly to what happens with reporting, where it's like, okay, you have all of this information. Maybe it's right? Like, and we've all been there where it's like 95% of your report or 99% of your report is right, but you have that one figure that the CEO or CFO knows is wrong. And now suddenly the rest of it's like, I don't think I can trust the rest of it if this basic thing is wrong. So I think that's kind of where a lot of companies are at, where it's like they need to build probably more reliable like reporting and less of it. Like, you don't need to do as much. I think that's probably what a lot of it comes down to. It's like, generally you don't need 10,000 dashboards, you need, you know, 10 or something.
Yeah, master the fundamentals. Yeah, I completely agree. You know, they do that survey every year of percentage of analytics projects and initiatives that have failed. And last year it was about 90%. And of those 90% that failed, about 90% of those companies reported that it was due to culture. Data quality is a big part of culture. What are some other cultural aspects that you see that may be causing projects to fail?
Yeah, I think some of it comes down to like a combination of like process, right? Like it's like you're so heavily focused on technology that like you don't necessarily have a process for, okay, we have a project idea, like let's, how does it actually, how do we determine if it's worth doing? So sometimes you're just doing the wrong projects. Sometimes you're doing too many projects because you haven't determined which ones are really worth doing. So sometimes you're just doing projects that don't even align with the business, right? Like in terms of like goals that they might have. So even if you finish, let's say a fraud detection system, on the other side, if you don't have like a business department that then is going to manage the fraud that you detect and somehow like actually, adjudicate those claims, you're kind of building it for nothing. So I think that's some of the things that can happen where it's like, you need to have this combination. Like there's this whole thing where it's like, we need to increase data literacy, right? But like on the flip side, the data team also constantly needs to increase like their business literacy in terms of like how they understand what they're doing fits into the business, right? Like it goes both ways. And having, it's hard because, we focus on, I think, on being experts at what we do. And so finding some level of mediation, whether that's a person, whether that's, a team that can kind of try to like find a happy middle ground or a process, and figure out what should be actually be done, I think is kind of one of the things that would be beneficial in most companies.
That's a great insight. And a lot of companies started moving that way with data mesh, which would have helped in building out more data stewards on the business side. But then AI came and some of those initiatives started to slow down. Data teams are often seen as costs rather than products that have a strong ROI. In your opinion, how can data teams change the way that they're viewed from being an expense to being a profit center?
Sure. I think there's probably two sides to that I view. In some cases, like a data team is a data team and it is a cost center. Like if that is what your organization is going to treat it as, like regardless of what they say, that's what it will be. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like I think someone once likened it to the accounting department, right? Like sometimes you're performing a function to give numbers so that business can make decisions, and that's not necessarily bad. I think if you see an opportunity, right, like if you see an opportunity for your business to maybe monetize some component of your data, because I think one of the easy ways that I often see companies do it is you might have insights to your customers in terms of like maybe you are a B2B business, you don't just have insights into like that customer probably has insights into their sales or something similar or whatever transactions go through your system. But you actually have, insights into all of the maybe their competitors as well. Obviously, you can't sell them the competitors data, but you can give them insights in terms of like maybe how they're doing as a whole in the industry, right? Which could be valuable to them. I have a few clients who do that, who like know location by location how their like certain products are doing. And they can kind of give back reporting to their customers and be like, hey, here's how your products are doing at location A versus location B compared, you're like the third highest selling product. We won't tell you who the other products are, but this is where you're fitting. This is where we think you have opportunities. So I do think there are those opportunities for some companies, but I also think on the flip side, there's some companies where it's like you are serving a function and that's fine. The thing there is just to do the best you can. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I think that's a good comment. We've seen the rise of analytics as a product, and I've been evangelizing that to try to help data teams show themselves as more of a profit center rather than a service. But to your point, yeah, there is basic infrastructure and there are services that we do provide that are legitimate costs.
Yeah, and I think again, like it's not to say that you can't. Obviously, there's definitely places where you can play a strategic role. You can help build products. Like I love the idea of like the analytics as a product. But in some organizations, they just might never let you do that. And you'll figure it out very quickly where it's like they might say like we're data driven or we're trying to do that. But on the flip side, they're cutting staff or they're not interested in putting a process around building products, right? Like you don't have any form of product development life cycle around your data, and you bring it up, and it's not going forward. And so they just want reports. And it's like, well, that might just be where you end up.
And to your point, you know, a lot of companies start their data teams, at least from what I've seen, you may have a different experience. They start their data teams often with an analyst, is what I've found. And then that analyst is kind of expected to figure out their own pipelines and build some reports and try to add some value immediately as the business scales. But then there comes a time where it exceeds that analyst's ability. When do you think, what are some signs that a business should start thinking about doing some serious data engineering?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll start running into the problems, usually around a combination of like speed. So how fast are your reports now operating? Okay, they're getting slower and slower. You're asking for a lot. Reproducibility, right? Like, okay, we're having a hard time. You know, we have 30 reports. They're all based on like a Power BI or something, and they all have their own little data model that you've built, or Tableau that has logic all ingested in it. So there's this lack of reproducibility because it's hard and it takes time. It takes, you know, way too long to build one new report because you don't have a standardized set of entities. Size, and then also a level of integration. So like the other thing that often I think comes about is like, hey, we want to do a report that integrates 5 different data sets. And now your analyst is going to take 6 months to do that because they have to like do some wild logic to try to join these 6 different data sources that don't talk to each other, and don't have any connection. So I do think that those are usually the signs. It's like you've got some level of performance issue, you've got some level of integration that is currently going to take too long. Projects are taking too long, right? You're asking for a simple request, it's taking too long because they just don't have all that data like immediately available. And instead, they're constantly having to do some sort of either manual process or something to kind of group it all together. And so I think those are some key points. Also, sometimes just time, where it's like you realize your analyst is spending whatever 90% of their day just trying to create data in a way that they can then use, you know, formants in a way that they can use. So those are usually the signs I think that I see.
What I've spoken with companies where they start getting to that point, they've got that decision to make of hire a new data engineer. Maybe it's in their budget, maybe it's not. Hire a consultant to come in and help them, but then who's going to maintain those pipelines? So often what I recommend to them is find a good consultant who they trust, and then also simultaneously upskill their analysts, at least one of them, into an analytics engineering role. With upskilling an analyst, what do you recommend somebody who would be interested, maybe a data analyst who has done some basic data modeling and thinks, you know what, I really would like to get deeper into the engineering side. What would you recommend to that person to go down that path?
Yeah, you know, and it's a very common path. I think a lot of people go from data analyst to data engineer, or data analyst, data scientist, or, you know, I think some people also look at that as like a step up. I just view it as like a different transition into a new role. Generally, you're going to pick up, obviously, maybe a little more deeper SQL knowledge. Like maybe before it was purely for like analytics and ad hoc reporting. Maybe now you get a little more structural with it. You think about tables. You start thinking about, you know, is there ways you can automate it? How do you build, you know, maybe larger queries that are performant? Generally, some Python or some programming of some kind. Python tends to be, I think, the most popular currently. I'm sure it'll change at some point, but definitely currently. And then some level of data warehousing and data pipeline knowledge needs to get picked up. So you can read a book from Kimball. Obviously, I think that's always the one people start with. And then from there, like, you know, start reading up a little bit more about maybe some more modern takes of it, because there is some changes that you know, with the cloud, we get some benefits that can change it. But even there, I generally see a lot of companies still use some level of dimensional modeling, right? Like it's the baseline that I think a lot of companies will use because it's easy to understand and easy to think through. Then data pipelines. And then as you're going through that process, like as you have this consultant, you know, it's a great opportunity to have them also upskill that employee, right? Like maybe make it part of their contract, be like, hey, like you'll run a lunch and learn or something with them and or coach them, and that'll be part of the process. That's something that I usually offer. Because I think that's important. I think, like, you know, you don't necessarily need to hire a new person, but yeah, I can definitely help you, you know, upskill your current employees to get them to a point where they can maintain the system and add new stuff to it and work with it. And I think that's a great way of kind of making sure you get the best out of everyone. So that, and also make your analysts kind of happy, because generally there might be an analyst who wants to grow into this role, right? Like they might have wanted it anyways. So now you give them an opportunity to learn and to challenge themselves in that way.
Such great advice. Well, Ben, thank you so much for your time, for being with us. Where can people find you?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me pretty much everywhere. YouTube, Substack, LinkedIn. You can look on Seattle Data Guy. Probably pop up somewhere. Don't ask ChatGPT for it. They don't know.